Wichman and Jonah Richman. Love in the 21st Century is a talk show with live call-ins, interviews, and discussions on the philosophical, the practical look of love. From romantic relationships to connections with humanity, one-third dating insights, one-third self-love guide, one-third compassion training.
As a wave across the land, we are moving, moving. Say no, face the change these bodies make and the way they are. Facing forward, shoulder to the storm, telling of moving. It takes one step, takes your voice. Takes your voice saying, I am not hearing if you are not naming it. I am not stopping if you are not changing it. Here are my hands, let's see what they're making. In the morning, in the rise up, there's a bridge from all that's been. In the dawning, the vines are pushing through the pavement. We were born of burning hearts. We are tearing off the reins from the ground up. Stopping if you are not changing it. Here are my hands, let's see what they're making. In the morning, in the rise up, there's a bridge from all that's been. In the dawning, the vines are pushing through the pavement. We were born of burning hearts. We are tearing off the reins from the ground up. We will build it from the clouds above. We're raining from the crowd up. We will raise it.
Love in the 21st Century is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by one of Chico's newest restaurants, Rallo's West, at 234 West 3rd Street in the heart of downtown. Rallo's West offers small and large plates, Maryland-style shrimp, blue crab cakes, a wine bar, charcuterie, and artisanal cheeses. Rallo's West is open from 5 till 9 p.m. until 10 on Friday and Saturday. For more information, visit them on Facebook or by calling 636-4468. Welcome back to Love in the 21st Century. This is Tamara Wickma with Jonah Richman, who I just called Jordan. Oops. Sorry about that. And we are here with Lorian Niles and Colleen Wolfchuk talking about love and Mother Earth. We've been talking about the series on Love and Mother Earth for a few weeks, and we probably will tonight and next week will be our last 2 weeks, but tonight's going to be a special one where we'll be talking about Grub Education, which is Growing Resourcefully Uniting Bellies. It's a nonprofit organization whose mission is to improve the quality of life in our community through locally based chemical-free agriculture, sharing of resources, and experiential learning and services. Grub Education is rooted in bringing hands-on learning experiences to both kids and adults in the community. Its work is based experientially educating that connects people to the environment, their community, and the role of agriculture in their lives. Grub Education promotes land stewardship, growing food, gathering food, and preserving food. Grub Education values, supports, and promotes local food systems that sustain us. It's going to be a thought-provoking conversation that has to do with so much of what we do every day. Eat. It's amazing. Be a part of the conversation. Feel free to call in. The number's 895-1114. You can also get to us on the Facebook page. We'll do our best to add any comments on into the conversation. So thank you so much, ladies, for being here.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering if I might. Jonah had asked both Colleen and I, what Grub Education is, and you just went through the long, verbose mission statement and the practical hands. But when Jonah read the description of your show, oh my goodness, it says it all right there. Practical look at love, the growing of food. You watch something go from a blossom, a seed, and it turns into food that nourishes you. That's rather a practical look at love. Romantic relationships. I don't know. I go out and I talk to my plants. How are you doing? Look at you. Go, go, go. It's a fabulous relationship. And then connections to humanity, and that's our stewardship, just the whole world around us and how we're connected. So that's a wrap. See you later. Bye.
Mm-hmm. That sounds great. I'm so happy that the two of you came in here today. And love to hear some about the history of Grub Education Program. How did this all get started?
From what I understand, there was a group of folks, Richard Roth being one, Richie Hirschton, Lee Altier, folks came together and they had a nonprofit that... Chico Food Network, and its desire was to bring this agricultural space that we're in an awareness to the community that lives here, because it's a historical agricultural space, and the education of people with how to steward the land and use it in the sense of feeding themselves was one of the first founding missions and goals of this group. And to get people to eat more locally and not be packaged food-oriented. And then coincidentally, some of the folks who started and lived on the land at 1525 Dayton Road, the Grub Cooperative, Stephanie Williams and Sherry Scott, started to reach out into the community and do some preschool school garden education. So they were applying for grants, and they were using the nonprofit status of the Chico Food Network. And at some point, there was just a shift. It was this new group of people that were living out at the Grub Cooperative, and they renamed, via the federal tax ID, it was Grub Education Program. And its mission, as Tammy stated, was just going out into the community and bringing a heightened awareness of you can be one with the earth and feeding yourself and taking care of it at the same time. And that's the short version of Grub Education.
And so just to clarify for the listeners out there, Grub is a name that's been around Chico for a while, and it it covers spans a number of different organizations. You just mentioned the Grub Cooperative. Can one of you explain what the Grub Education Program is in distinction from any of the other Grub organizations?
Sure. So it seems a bit confusing within the community, as the community that has surrounded Grub and been Grub in so many different forms. It has ebbed and flowed and changed. And so Grub, the community, thanks, Tammy. Grub, the cooperative that was living on the land, housed both Grub Education Program and the Grub CSA Farm. And so the Grub CSA Farm has had branched off and moved to a new location. And as the land changed hands, and the Grub Cooperative then moved from that property, Grub Education is now a new set of folks holding the program and located amongst ourselves and in the community, in the community gardens. And so it doesn't actually have an office. So we are separate entities, but still with a lot of the same mission of improving the quality of lives amongst friends and community members, and all through the food that we eat and the food that we grow and the food that we cook together and share. And so that's just a little bit about the separation of the Grub entities.
Nice. And so what services are provided to the community by the Grub Education Program?
Well, actually, we do quite a lot. I was thinking last night, okay, let's break this down into our three programs, and then it ended up being like six or seven items that programs that we offer. So one being we support community gardens, which there are quite a few in the community. I think there are 26. And that's just community gardens alone. That doesn't include our school garden program, which, Lori, maybe you know how many school gardens there are currently.
The ones that we've dovetailed with, there's seven elementary, one junior, and one senior high school within Chico, and then in outlying areas, about three more.
Yeah, so the school garden program is growing every few months and getting more popular, definitely more widely accepted by the unified school district. And then we also offer cooking classes, which are happening quite often and are usually free to the public, as are all the workshops offered through the community garden program and the school gardening program. We also have a glean team, which gleaning is sometimes a little foreign to people when they say, oh, okay, well, what is gleaning? Is that dumpster diving? Is it, I don't know, gleaning scraps of food off people's plates and composting it? But our glean team specifically goes to people's homes, people who have trees, fruit trees that they're not picking, or nut trees that they're not picking. Sometimes we go to public places where there are fruit trees that people aren't picking, or where there's food that's just extra. Maybe the neighborhood is picking the trees, but there's extra fruit that's going to end up on the ground, and so we glean that. And oftentimes, if we have an abundance, we will donate it to local organizations like the food bank. And oftentimes, we offer it to those who come out to help us pick and hold a cooking class or a preserving class with that, that is also free to the public. So the food does not get wasted, that's for sure. And then what else do we do?
We have, just on the side, we have a collection of farming tools that we lend out, everything from a wheel hose to broad forks. We also have a dish rental program where it just kind of brings it back down to being zero waste for your event. We have crates of plates, pint jars, knives and forks, napkins, and you know, they can come forth. We also, in going out and setting up the community gardens or the school gardens, doing gleaning, we can do little workshops and educate people on, you know, how to prune a tree and seed ball making, or how to plan your garden, how to pot up, how to compost. So everything about how to grow your food, be it within a school area or your backyard or within a community. And so community being it can be a neighborhood or an apartment building or just the community of people. Getting people to come together and talk about food and share food is kind of what we're about.
So many wonderful things you guys are doing for the local community food scene. Can you explain the relationship with Grub Education Program and Cultivating Community, which is a organization that I know is in relationship, and I've seen flyers around town over the years for Cultivating Community.
So Cultivating Community North Valley was the name that was decided upon about 6 years ago. There was a CDFA, which stands for California Department of Food and Agriculture, grant that was awarded to three entities, and these three entities that came together were Richard Roth and his Seek Chaos, and his driving force was to grow the farmers markets, small farmers markets, to get not just people going to the stream routine market, but in small communities, invigorating them and to invigorate them with accepting EBT. And so that was his mission. And then the entity of the OVP, which stands for Organic Vegetable Project, which is a student-run farm of Chico State, that entity came on board, and then Grub Education Program. And its thoughts were to develop community gardens where, you know, people, again, just didn't have the knowledge or the know-how and the skills to go in and support, both financially helping them start it up and then imparting information to them. So those three entities came together and created Cultivating Community North Valley. And they were awarded this CDFA grant, which spanned 2.5 years. And then it was re-granted, you know, little twist and turn. Seek Chaos was no longer part of the equation. Something that was created in the first grant was called the Edible Petal Bike Kitchen, came on board, and the three entities ran again and were functioning under a USDA grant, and it's a specialty crop block grant, which basically means we are supposed to be educating people about how to eat fruits and vegetables and grow them.
Great. So I'm curious, so for listeners out there who are wanting to get more involved with the local food scene, and they want to maybe grow local food or just support it in happening, what ways do you suggest are like entry points? How do people get involved?
There's so many ways to get involved. So I would say the most fun way that's actually coming up is our Tomato Festival, which is going to be happening August 28th. It's from 2 to 6 p.m. And this is an event where you can bring tomatoes, like heirloom tomatoes that you've grown in your garden. You can bring them for a little competition, a taste testing competition. You can just come and taste a variety of white, black, purple, green, orange, yellow, every kind of tomato that you've ever believed could exist will be there and highlighted, and so you can taste test and just have a good time with other foodies that are in the community. And so we do a few events throughout the year where it's a lot, mostly of a social gathering to connect to other people who are really passionate about local food. And then we might have some educational portion to the Tomato Festival. There might be some other people to connect with about community gardens if you're wanting a plot. So there's that, and then there will be a hose down in October, and we'll have more information about that to come. So those are just really fun social events, but other ways you can get involved. We have some educational workshops that are coming up, and I can tell you a little bit about that if this is the time.
Why Colleen kind of comes up with some of the workshop times. An easy in is we have a website, grubed.org. Our contact information is there. There's a comment sheet where you could submit, you know, I'm wondering about, and we would be back in touch with you if we're just piquing your interest. We also send out a newsletter once a month, and via the, I think there's a button on the GrubEd page, but if not, you could go to the Cultivating Community NV.org website and sign up for our newsletter that tells you of all the events coming up. Also, just every other Tuesday, you want your hands doing something, we meet at 1 Mile Recreation Area on the Woodland Ave side, which would be the south side of 1 Mile, at 9 o'clock. And we gather, and we have a location. We go out and glean food, and you're meeting other people, and you might be part of just the glean, or you might be part of the distribution of the food. So that's an ongoing activity.
You can come by bike or in your car and carpool with other people.
And you get to take a little bit of the gleaned food home as well. So those are like automatic goes, and they're scheduled. They're there. We're there.
Mm-hmm.
And some of our workshops that we do are at other, like the Colleen mentioned, the fun ones, and the other fun ones are at like intermeshing with an established community. For instance, there's going to be a salsa making workshop that's going to be held at the tourist shelter, and if for nothing else, just going out to the tourist shelter and interacting with folks that you may not interact with every day and imparting skills of how to make salsa, how to enjoy the fresh bounty when their lives may not be as bright and shiny as yours, is just another caveat to how to be involved, which is one of the, sometimes Colleen and I, when we're out and about gathering supplies for workshops or on our way to one, we can laughingly say that the folks that we have met in the last two and a half years, I would not have come into knowing these great shining people if I didn't have this job with Grub Education Program. And so learning how to communicate with somebody entirely new and getting to know what their life is about, and you know, why the heck do they want to grow? What is he growing, like turnips, this one man and his
rutabaga.
My God, we have like had a seed selection where they could go and pick any seeds they wanted to plant early in the spring. And people are going through and like, is it okay if I get like 10 different things? Is it okay if I get this? And this one man, I don't know how many packages of rutabaga he has, but he was really excited. I really want to know why the heck he's growing so much rutabaga.
Maybe he's pickling it.
Could be, but it's like, you know, it's just the intrigue of meeting new people. And that's, if you're like one of those people who wants to go beyond just growing food, but know how other people grow food and why they grow it,
it's a great way to meet people.
Another thing to add to what Lori was saying was, you know, there are some gardens that are mostly volunteer-run, and they're part of an organization like the Peace and Justice Center, where they have a lot of volunteers coming in and helping out with the garden, but they can always use more help. Or I'm trying to think of other places, like the Teen Drop-In Center. They've got some garden containers out in front of their office. And the 6th Street Drop-In Center. And
Hartford Square.
Hartford Square Apartments.
People, you know, there's some of the, or Bidwell Avenue's garden, which is supported. It's part of the ARC of Butte County organizations garden. And here's people who, with physical limitations, that get to go out into a garden and have therapy. And you could be part of that as well.
So we're always looking for volunteers who have the time and want to just be a part of a garden. You can volunteer once, you could volunteer on the regular, and I'm a good person to contact if you're wanting to get involved with those gardens. And I guess I'll give my contact information later, but...
You can give it now. Okay. You can give it twice.
Great. So you can email me. My name is Colleen Wolfchuk, and you can email me at riverbluesfarm@gmail.com. And another thing I was actually thinking of is sometimes we do like a build, kind of a barn raising of sorts. So at the Jesus Center Farm, we built a greenhouse. And if you are sort of carpentry-minded or really like to do that kind of thing, some construction, that's a really good way to come out and meet some new friends and help one of the farms in town or a small community garden raise some infrastructure, which is really, really helpful. Sometimes we build sinks or garden boxes or cold frames or a potato growing bin, or I mean, there's numerous different construction projects that we help out with. So those are fun.
And with that too is we're not doing like this big physics project or engineering project. It's something that you can take the skills. And we'll have a handout that says, these are the supplies that we got, here's how we sourced it, and here, you can take this home and you could replicate it in your own, you know, community garden or your own home with your little village of people. So we try to keep it so that it's easy, understandable, and inexpensive.
So you are listening to 90.1 KZFR, Love in the 21st Century. We have Colleen Wolfchuk and Lori Niles from the Grub Education Program here today. So in my early 20s was when I first started learning about the environmental impact of our current food situation in the United States and with in the world and global food trade. And so I think that's what excites me so much about the Grub Education Program, is how it's so focused on creating more food here and localizing and teaching and educating ourselves in this culture where we seem to, where most of us are so separated from our food source. And we go to grocery stores and buy it, and we don't even think about where it comes from. And that this effort is really changing that and educating people. And I'm wondering if I'd like to hear what inspired you to join the Grub Education Program.
I joined Grub sort of by default. Which I'm so happy I did, actually. So I fell in love.
It's not default, man.
Well, it wasn't the sort of process where I applied and then I went to an interview and then I got the job. I was working with Max Key and Elliot Profit out at the Grub Cooperative, and I was sort of in a support managerial role, helping them out with Heartseed Farm at the time. And in the evenings, I just would offer any advice about how to use the herbs that we were offering in our CSA package, or tips on how to cook the squash, or, you know, whatever we had in the CSA box. I would just kind of tell people, you know, this is the best way to use it. So Stephanie had approached me and asked if I wanted to be a part of the grub education program, and I was really stoked to do it, and and that sort of spiraled into this really fun job that I've just really been enjoying. But I feel like I've always been a foodie and been really concerned for our water quality and our air quality and our soil quality. Just as I've researched and watched documentaries over the years about the conventional ag system, it's just blown me away how many millions of gallons of chemicals we put into our environment every day. And so I felt like in my life, I felt really passionate about spending my dollars on local or at least organic food as much as I can. And so, yeah, that's just taken me down this path of wanting to know more and how to grow my own food. And I've worked at quite a few different farms around the United States and learned from different farmers who all have a similar motive and have just taught me so much about just successful food cultivation. So that's kind of where I got it from.
I think I was impressed as a kid growing up. My family, I was born in Massachusetts, and when I was young, we moved to Florida, and we would spend summers going back to Massachusetts, and occasionally my dad would go on a trip all by himself to Massachusetts, and he would come back with he would go with an empty suitcase, and he grew up on a family farm, and when he would come back, he would open up the suitcase, and it would be like summer squash and tomatoes. Like, I just thought that's how everybody traveled, and it was just the most exciting thing. And to eat field tomato, or to be in the back of a car with your, as a kid, and your hair is sweating against your body, and you know the last thing you want to do is get out and be in the sun. And my dad would pull over and he would say, "Look, it, there's something like, you know, you pick cornfield," and I'm like, "Oh my god!" But then we would get lost in that maze and that rustling of, you know, tall grasses, or having stained blueberry hands. I kind of grew up in that environment, and it really kind of got under my skin. And then as an adult, similar to you, Jonah, it was the questioning of, like, you know, what's this water use about, and how does this all work, and putting some puzzle pieces together. And I was working at Planned Parenthood, and it was a young woman who came in with a ginormous sweating container, and she put it on the intake desk, and we were talking through her medical history, and she had these blue lips, and I was like, "What's in that cup?" And what she told me was it was lunch, and everything about me just did a 180 and said, "Oh, okay, I think I really need to understand what is being presented to kids, that's their choice, and how can I get people to be excited about, you know, growing food?" And so I just kind of changed my walking path and said, "Blue lips is not okay."
So you both touched in on a bit about what was happening in our environment to our food, and since this is, you know, through our grub education helps to educate our community about that, I'd hope that maybe you both could spend a couple minutes about what you mean, like, because there's a lot of people out there that aren't so aware that the influences of what's happening to our food. Colleen, you mentioned the soil, the air, and the water. So maybe you could just give it a couple minutes and talk about what exactly is going on so people can become a little bit more aware?
Sure. This is such a huge topic. It's really hard to cover in a couple minutes, but right. we'll do our best. So I came from Florida, and as I drove out here, I really thought Chico was on the coast. So when I was driving through rice fields, I mm-hmm. thought, where in the world am I? Where am I going? Oh, my God, this is not the coast. And I thought to myself, these can't be organic rice fields. Like, these must be conventionally grown rice. And so over the years that I've lived in Chico, I've really kind of kept an eye on, like, okay, well, what's going on out in those fields, or what's going on out in the almond orchard that's right next to my house? And yeah, just living next to conventional ag, you start to really notice, like, how much they spray, when they spray, what are they spraying? Is it a fungicide on the almonds? Are they spraying Roundup to kill the weeds? Are they spraying some sort of chemical fertilizer that has ammonia in it and is affecting our groundwater by raising the level of nitrates, which are, at a certain level are really detrimental to our health. So there's all these different things, and also Roundup, which is sprayed on the ground to kill the weeds, is really, really bad for our health when it gets into our water. And so it's... Yeah, it's kind of a heavy topic, and I feel like it's such a huge economy, this conventional ag, where most of the country, if you drive across the country, you see fields and fields and fields, miles and miles of soybean, cotton, corn, what else is out there? Wheat. And these fields, if you live in those places, you really do notice that they're just constantly spraying. And so I don't know, it's hard to imagine how much chemical is really in our water, in our air, because you can't see it, you can't taste it, but it's definitely there. And I really feel that a lot of our health problems currently stem from this mixture of chemicals that we're ingesting, or we're absorbing through our skin, or we're eating if, we're buying conventionally grown food from the grocery store. And so that's the biggest thing that sticks out to me is all of that.
In part because I do a lot of interaction with kids and talking about food and growing food. And what I love is that we've gotten past, we still incorporate, the basic, what are the parts of the plant and what they do and their function. We cover that, but to have meaningful conversation about, it can be about water, but also about food miles. A packaged food, our world here in the United States seems a world of convenience, and it is difficult to look at the politics of food because not everybody has the ability to go to a store. There's the corner store and what it stocks, and the food that's presented to that a parent is able to afford is not always one that seems nutritionally deep and rich. And so being able to teach people how to have a balanced meal, eat right when money's tight, is one of the series of classes that Karen Goodwin came up with. And I think there's the ecological money issue and politics that's tied in with food and with water use, and and the chemical use, just making things convenient for harvest and for planting. And it's Mother Nature doesn't necessarily work in a convenient manner, and working with her in a beneficial manner you just look at how things grow so much more naturally, more healthfully. So keeping things in balance is a great learning tool. When we were talking, when you were asking us about how we got into our grub education program or what brought us to this path, there's something, like, I think sometimes people think that, you know, we might hold the answer on how do you do this. Like, I just want to come to a workshop and be told and, you know, give me the information. And, you know, you could be farming, or you could have your backyard garden, or you could be cooking for a lifetime, and you're always, it's kind of the joy of just whatever's presented in that season, the season before, is what you're going to be able to use as, you know, and make something with. It's your clay. And that's the fun. It is not to go, you know, like to know exactly what it's going to taste like. You just kind of ebb and flow with it. And I think that's the way life, in some way, it feels that's how life is, and not to be, you know, formed and regimented. You know, you learn from doing, and it's, you know, that kind of credence, as opposed to an overarching, like, okay, let's control how we're going to grow food. I don't know how that one works so special.
Yeah. That sounds really great. It's what it's making me think of is folks who think they don't know how to farm or grow food or be involved with food growth, and it sounds like instead of showing up and you guys just explaining, well, this is step one and this is step two, while there is probably some guidance that way, but it almost sounds like it's more showing the art form. Like, this is a creative process, and mm-hmm. giving that invitation to just start playing with it.
I think of it just like, you know, in that art form, when you are, you know, I've sat through some art critiques, and, you know, somebody's asking, you know, so what did you put down first, and how did you get that depth, and how did you do that shadowing? I mean, it's a discussion, and I think that's one of the best gifts that we're given or encouraged to do, is to ask, and to ask, you know, to say, hey, I've got these white flies, what the heck do I do about them, or why do I have them, and not feeling, oh, you know, my plants aren't doing well because they have all these things eaten out of them. You know, it's the discussion, and that's what is really nice, and I feel really akin with, is sitting with somebody and saying, I can bring my eaten up leaf to somebody and go, what, you know, what's going on here? And they'll look at it and go, oh yeah, I had that one time, and there's a story behind it, and then there's, you know, we'll try this, or is it on the north side, or is it next to this, and there's a problem solving, and it's great in the end. There's a solution or something that I can go back and try. I love mm-hmm. that.
Yeah, I feel like my creative process with growing food has evolved so much in the last 6 years that I've been working in agriculture, and I just feel like I'm learning something new every week at least, and whether I'm researching it, or I've talked to someone at my workshops that says, oh yeah, slugs in my garden, actually I do this little treatment. And what I've learned the most, which I always come back to, is more a traditional sense of agriculture than sort of our Western minds have been cultivated to think, well, okay, I have a problem and I'm going to do this solution. And that's kind of where our conventional ag system has been birthed and formed into, is like, okay, well, we've got these bugs, so we're going to kill them with this particular pesticide. And something really valuable that's been lost in that are hedgerows, something so simple as the lines between farms that once housed, you know, thousands of beneficial insects, where there were trees and flowering bushes and ground cover and oftentimes creeks. Those have been totally lost because people just thought they weren't important. That wasn't cultivated land, that didn't make them any money. But that's where the populations of insects that really controlled the balance of the pesty insects, that's where they came from. And so we've lost that because our minds have kind of pigeonholed into, okay, well, we have this problem and we're going to, you know, solve it with this solution and we're going to make as much money as we can. And it's the boom and bust mentality. And so I try to come back to that, like getting into my creative process with growing food and just trying to balance out, you know, how much food am I growing for myself and how much am I growing for my gopher?
Absolutely. The birds. When somebody was asking me recently, they're like, what do you do for your little orchard and all the bird pecks? I'm like, I leave that canopy up top for the birds because, you know, they're part of where I live. I am in the same ecology system as them. In teaching school gardening, it's the joy of looking at these little journals, and it's really hard. You know, little kids learn how to write. I don't remember doing it this way, but I probably did, where they use a finger in between each word. So creating a journal takes a long time, but it's that slowing down of what did you see in the garden? Okay, let's try to remember and let's try to record. And then when they come back and they're looking at it again, and they get so dang excited when a little emergent leaf is coming up and they're like, whoa, look at that. It's like, okay, let's draw it. And then, you know, where's the sun? And they start looking at the world as opposed to that, you know, that end result of are all my letters in the row straight? You know, that's important that somebody can read your writing, but they're interactive with the world around them and observing and wondering. It's a great kind of information to encourage in people.
So those are some really great stories that you both shared about personal experience and people that are working in these gardens and that are benefiting from Grub Education. I feel like from my experience, it's such a big part of what Grub Education provides is a sense of community. It really brings people together and connects people on something that's so fundamental, but also like really good people that really care about each other and really want to care about their environment and their community. So if you're in the, you know, if you're apprehensive at all about joining or coming along to one of these Grub events, I really encourage you to at least send an email or to give a call. I don't know if either of you gave a phone number. Some of our listeners are not internet people, so right. We should definitely send out give them a number that they can call, because it's worth it if you're out there, you know, with the slightest of interest, or maybe you don't even really that honestly have that much of an interest. You just want to connect with people in our community that are passionate about something to learn a little bit more. Then it's a great start, and they're super welcoming people and very knowledgeable. And like Colleen was sharing, it's a evolution of learning. It's not necessarily like, oh, everybody knows what they're doing that are out there. It's really a creative evolution. So would one of you mind giving out a phone number?
Sure. People can contact me. My phone number is a 239 area code. And so it's 239-272-9661. And you can also email me, like I said before, at riverbluesfarm@gmail.com. And if your question pertains to something other than community gardens or, you know, something that I'm focusing on, I can definitely direct you to the right person.
And if you want, you can just go to our website, which is grubed.org, and our contact information is there as well. We, as Tammy said, like, you know, maybe you're not necessarily wanting to do the gardening part. With the gleaning, people can contact us if they have a tree or an abundance of something that they're growing, be it grapes or nuts or fruit trees, and we'll come out and glean for you, leave you some. So if you don't want to jump on the bandwagon and participate in a workshop or a hose down or a tomato fest, but you got a tree and we can come out and we'll share it with other people. So there's that connection as well. Or if you got a great idea that you want us to tell people about, you can go ahead and contact us.
Mm-hmm.
And being a person myself who sometimes is a little apprehensive to get out into the community and hang out with a bunch of folks I don't know yet, my experience with anything I've done with the Grub Education Program has always been really wonderful, sweet people, and nice and happy to share, and very welcoming.
What I think it, at our last two, we had a squash celebration last fall, and the tomato festival last August, and the blend of folks, there isn't, you know, just one age group that's there. There's kids, there's youth, there's young folks, there's middle-aged folks, there's elders, and everybody's just enjoying. So I think that mix, you don't have to, you know, think, oh, I'm too old, or I'm too young, or I don't know. We all eat food.
Mm-hmm. So before we completely finish this hour out, ladies, and move on to Ecotopia, which is up next with Steve and Susan Chudy. They're on every Tuesday after us. I hope that maybe you could kind of bring it into like that heart center, which is really where I like to think that this show resonates from, is like in your heart of hearts, what do you see, or what do you hope for in your works with Grub Education?
My wish is that people take the time to connect with their food, that if you're wanting to improve your health, if your mental health, your emotional health, your physical health, that you really just take the time to connect with your food, connect with the plants around your house, even if they're not edible. That I find that the time that I spend out in nature, even when it's just outside my door, sitting next to my strawberry plants that are in a pot, I just feel a calm, and I don't know, I just feel home. Not like in my house home, but, you know, home on the land with the spirit of the plants that are around me. And I think in our busy lives, we don't take the time to really breathe and sit down and relax and connect to something that doesn't talk to us but relates to us in a different way and nourishes us in different ways than we're used to. So even if it's for a couple minutes each day or once a week, whenever you think of it, I find that that really fills me. And sitting in a hammock is a really good way to do that too.
I agree. Like the home feeling, or honing in to, I just picked up my CSA from the Grub CSA Farm, and it doesn't have to be a hurried process, but you know, it's supplementing the food that I grow at home and then I buy at the other farmers markets. And I can look in the eyes of the people who grew my food, and I can go out and touch and smell and look at the leaves of the food that I'm growing, and just, it's, I'm like in a relationship with it. I was away from my house, from my garden and trees for 3 weeks, and to come home and just look at everyone and just go, wow, look at you. Oh my goodness, how are you doing over there? It's part of my existence, and it feels really good, and I hope that others can reach out, and if they don't have something planted, give us a call. We'll tell you how to do root starts and, you know, grow something. It's like puppy love. It's just great.
I have to say something about my infant. I have a one-year-old, and I have to say that every time that I take him outside, no matter where it is, he immediately calms down. It doesn't matter how much he's crying, for how long, he just instantly becomes calm and really enjoys the outdoors. And I take him into the garden with me all the time, and I really feel like that's his happy place too. And so even though our children or our babies can't necessarily express that that's what they want, I feel like they need it. They need it in a way that we need water and food, and they need that connection with the land as well. So, yeah, putting that out there for all you mamas.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, ladies, so much for joining us. Thank you, Jonah, for inviting these wonderful women to join us. And I feel that just as you're sharing, and throughout this hour, really talking about love and Mother Earth, it just embodies through your voice of, like, how truly in love with what you're doing and how much you want to share that love with our community. And hopefully, if you're listening to this radio show and you don't live in the Chico community and can benefit from Grub Education, maybe you're inspired to find out what's happening in your own community or to start something in your own community. As Lori was explaining, you know, it's really a creative process. So just start wherever you are and begin a new relationship with what you're growing and with your food, with the food you're maybe sitting down with right now to eat your dinner. So thank you so much for listening. We will be back with you next Tuesday.
I woke up this morning, stumbled out of bed. The first thing that happened to me, I found myself in a remote desert church. I laid down on the altar to sing. I'm gonna lay down on the altar. There is no better place, no better place to lay down on the altar and sing. Up from the stone, the moss and the bone arose a benevolent song. I opened my mouth, my hands and my heart, and sang to the ceiling above. I'm gonna lay down on the altar. There is no better place, no better place to lay down on the altar and sing. Lay it down, give it up, lay down.
Strewn floor of the 41st Republican National Convention at the Quicken Loans Arena in Cleveland, Ohio. Okay, actually a hotel room about 30 miles east, but there's balloons here too. I brought some back. The best way to describe what went down this week is Trump-a-palooza. It was all Trump all the time when it wasn't about Hillary, which was often. To say she wasn't getting hit with the happy stick is like intimating that Phoenix in August might creep up past balmy. Chris Christie was ready to persecute, prosecute, execute, play a flute, and electrocute her until she turned to ashes, which he personally sprinkled into the Cuyahoga River. And did you ever notice that even when he's addressing supporters, Christie always sounds like he's reading them their Miranda rights? Ben Carcinogenic actually accused Hillary of being a disciple of Lucifer. Wow, where do you go from there? Not a lot of wiggle room left. What happens if she kicks a puppy? Is she more eviler than Lucifer? And since not a lot of heavyweight Republicans were in attendance, organizers were forced to flood the stage with Trumps. It was downright Trumpalicious. On the first night, the third wife gave a speech in which she lifted large portions from someone else's first wife. On Tuesday, the daughter of the second wife addressed the assembled, along with the son of the first wife. On Wednesday, it was the other son of the first wife that waxed poetic. And on the closing night, the daughter of the first wife introduced the man himself. Then the show ended with the whole crew crowding the stage, including the son of the third wife. And I'm not sure, but I think maybe wives number one and number two and a couple of assorted mistresses snuck up there as well. The funny thing is, they're all blonde. Even the ones that aren't blonde are blonde, if you catch my drift. It was Trump-tastic, or Trump-atrocious, depending on your point of view. So now it's on to Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love for Hillary Rama. And I don't know if it'll be as exciting, but there will definitely be better